The Hammer, Chapter 34. The lizard spoke from the stone platform overlooking the karst amphitheater.
The gods have found the father guilty. Now we shall see if the daughter shares his treason.
Corvin stared trance-like at the water. Tirith did not want him to save her, but how could letting her drown be the right thing to do? If only he had the hammer to help him. He shook his head. He didn't need to hold the hammer to know the truth. He had promised to do whatever he could to save her, and there was no way he would let her die just to save his own life. She was the key to the future of the core, not him. He raised his eyes. Tirith was slowly sliding her feet toward the back edge of the pier.
No, Corvin shouted as he ran out into the light. You do not have to die to save me.
He raced toward the pier. Two palace guards ran in to cut him off.
It's a trap, Tira shouted. Run!
Corvin did not slacken his pace. He beat the guards to the pier and ran out to Tirith. He stopped one step above her and looked into her eyes. Don't jump, Tirith. We can escape. He turned to face the two red cloaks that stood at the base of the pier, looking up at the chief watcher for instructions. Neither of the hooded men had any warning when two thin tentacles snaked out of the water and wrapped around their ankles. In the blink of an eye, both men disappeared into the water with hardly a ripple. The lizard spoke into the electric air.
Terran, you may believe you could save your sister from judgment, but now the two of you shall be judged together.
The lizard lifted both arms over his head.
I call upon the gods of the water to show us if these two are the source of the lies that have caused you such displeasure.
Corvin put his hands on Tira's shoulders.
We're going to fall into the water together, but you must not panic. Keep your mouth closed. Don't let the air go out of your body. I won't let you drown, I promise.
Tirith nodded, fear rising in her eyes. Reaching into his robe, Corvin pulled out the stub of a fire stick just as a wall of spray exploded around them. Wrapping Tirith tightly in his arms, he toppled them from the pier. Clouds of bubbles rose around them as they plunged into the pool. Corvin flicked the fire stick open and filled his lungs with air. Pulling Tirith close, he tried to push the bubbling stick into her mouth, but her lips were clamped shut. They were dropping deeper. He tried to show her the trick, but her eyes were squeezed tight. A thin stream of bubbles flowed from her nose. She had to have fresh air. Corvin pulled another deep breath from the fire stick, placed his mouth firmly over hers, and forced air into her lungs. Tirith's eyes opened wide, and more bubbles flowed from her nostrils. Again, Corvin pulled air into his lungs and put his mouth to hers. This time, Tirith relaxed and allowed the air to flow freely into her body. He pulled away and grabbed more air from the stick. Tirith's blue eyes locked on his. Her lips lifted in a slight smile, and this time she put her mouth over his as they shared the air together. Their intertwined bodies didn't have a chance to fight the tentacles that wrapped around them. Corvin strained against the thick arms, but the tentacles squeezed tighter and swept them back into a dark opening in the wall of the karst. His lungs cried out for more air, but the stub of the fire stick was lashed firmly to his side. The tentacles jerked, squeezed even tighter, and then suddenly they were gone. Corvin released a burst of stale air, then pulled up the fire stick and filled his lungs. Tirith watched, then took it from his hand and did the same. Her bubbles climbed away from them toward a large silvery moon. Pulling on Tirith's hand, he kicked furiously, swimming upward. They broke the surface in a small cavern lit by patches of phosphorus yellow slime that floated on top of the water. Ahead of them, a shaft of light shone on a broken stone stair that descended into the water. Corvin towed Tirith toward it, and they crawled out of the water, collapsing on the steps. As his breathing returned to normal, Corvin turned his head to see Tirith looking at the water in amazement.
My father always told me it was possible to survive the water, but I did not believe him.
She turned to look at him.
I didn't believe him about you either.
She studied his face for a long moment, and Corvin found himself wondering how someone so strong could also be so beautiful. A smile tugged at the corner of her lips.
So, what happened to the frightened boy I met in the prison?
Corvin returned her gaze. He found someone worth fighting for. Tira's smile spread into her eyes, and Corvin's cheeks grew warm. He had been referring to Kate, but he was not unhappy that Tirith understood he meant her as well.
I am glad you came back, and I am thankful you did not let me drown.
A mischievous sparkle touched her eyes.
Of course,
Now you may have to go back to prison for kissing the high priest's daughter without his permission.
The warm flush spread up to Corvin's ears.
Tirith laughed and punched his shoulder. I'm just teasing you. My father wouldn't...
Her voice trailed off. She bit her lip and turned to look over the water.
I'm sorry I couldn't save him, Corvin said. I didn't think he would jump in.
She nodded. He knew it was just a matter of time before the poison killed him. I admire him for exposing the Chief Watcher's lies, even with his death.
The water in the cave exploded as huge bubbles of air hit the surface, sending them both scrambling up the steps away from the rising water.
The water creature! Tira shouted, climbing higher.
No, no, it's the Chief Watcher. He intends to drown all the priests.
How can he?
The water churned and belched another explosion of air.
Corvin hollered over the rising noise.
He controls the level of the water from the pillars where he stands. The low place where all the priests are sitting in has been sealed off by a stone door. When the water rises into the priest's area, none will escape the water or the creature below.
Tirith tore up the stairs with Corvin close behind her. Muted echoes of the Chief Watcher's voice reached them as they squeezed through a crack into a narrow corridor. The Chief Watcher's voice came from both directions.
Tirith grabbed his shoulder. I'm going left. You go right. If you find the Chief Watcher, come back and get me.
She pushed him away, but then pulled him back.
Don't do anything without me. I need you to stay alive.
Corvin nodded and turned to go, but Tirith pulled him back again.
Do you have it with you?
His heart sank and he shook his head. Her face dropped.
But I thought... Do you have a sword?
Again, no.
Her voice rose. Anything at all?
Corvin reached under his cloak and held out the crippen rope. She hesitated, then took it from his hand and ran up the tunnel. Corvin watched her disappear around the corner, then sprinted in the other direction.
What good would a rope be against the black lizard?
The tunnel grew dark and jogged to the left, bumping Corvin off the wall and into something soft.
Clumsy oaf, a voice hissed in his ear. We aren't moving yet. Stay in your position.
A burst of light shot into the tunnel from a small window at the end. Blinking, Corvin found himself at the end of a row of palace guards, all crammed into a short, wide passage.
"Where's your pike?" asked the man in front of him. He reached into the corner. "Take this. You'll need something to keep them from coming over the wall. The idiots made it too short, just so the spectators could see better." "Blue flag," someone whispered. "Let's move."
A door opened at the end of the hallway, and the red cloaks marched out. Corvin followed as they spread out along the wall behind the priests, leaving him standing outside a door directly beneath the toe of the statue's boot. Each of the guards carried a long pike with a cruelly barbed metal tip. Corvin's was only a long wooden lumion pole with flaps of leather attached to the end.
"I have brought in my palace guard to protect you," the Chief Watcher announced. "If the priests are all in this conspiracy, they may try to break out and harm you. As we have seen with Terran, what begins as lies and deceit often turns into murder."
The black curtains behind the lizard parted, and the leader of the Rakash slipped in behind him to whisper in his ear. The Chief Watcher nodded, and the bony creature slipped away.
"People of the Core, it has often been the self-proclaimed Corvans who have been the source of our problems. Whether among the rebels, the broken, or our own priests, these charlatans have led good people to destruction. Even our high priest and his family has succumbed to the wiles of one of these masters of deception. But we have finally caught him, the priest Jorid."
The curtain parted, and the four Rakash escorted Jorid out. A gag was stuffed in his mouth, and he was bound with a long blue crippen rope. It was forked at the end, and the separate strands spiraled down each of his legs. The Rakash leader walked behind the priest, manipulating the crippen to force Jorid to walk forward like a puppet on a string. As the Rakash guided Jorid to the front lip of the platform, the Chief Watcher pointed at Jorid.
"This deceiver planned to use Terran to take control of the palace through his army of priests."
His dark eyes turned to the green robes.
"So, let us first test the priests in this conspiracy. If they are guilty, then Jorid also stands judged."
Without a moment's hesitation, the lizard lifted his arms.
"Answer us, O gods! Cleanse your temple, so we might worship in truth."
As he dropped his arms back onto the pillars, a massive water spout spiraled out of the pool and dropped back as the water level rose rapidly.
The priests cried out and pushed back to the wall as the water overflowed the karst. A few in the crowd stood and chanted, "Death to the traitors! Death to the priests!" The water rose to the first tier of seats and stopped. The crowd was intentionally watching the priests, the guards, and the swirling water, but Corvin looked to the chief watcher. He was pulling on his pillars and looking anxiously at the narrow window cut into the left boot of the statue. Inside the boot, Corvin could see the huge man floundering about in the control room, frantically tugging on levers. The chief watcher's pillars shifted about of their own accord as the lizard struggled to keep his balance between them. The chief watcher pulled back hard and finally regained control. The water rose. The lizard looked down at the priests with the same bloodthirsty anticipation Corvin had seen when he devoured the Lumian heart of the mother plant. Corvin felt someone's eyes on him. Beyond the chief watcher, Jord was staring at him, his faith seething with anger. Corvin lowered his head to hide under his hood and looked into the karst. The speed of the water was increasing and a deep whirlpool formed, sending waves of water toward the priests. A few tried to climb the wall behind them, but they were met by pointed barbs. One fell from the stands into the swirling water. His terrified cries circled around with his body until he plunged into the center of the vortex and disappeared. The spectators watched in dumb amazement. "They may call upon the gods," shouted Lizard, "but they will be answered in judgment, for the priests are guilty of blasphemy." The water swirled higher and climbed over another step. One more rise and all the priests would either be drowned or impaled by the guards. Corvin watched in utter hopelessness. Tirith must have been captured. Yet again, his best intentions had failed. Or had they? A pale green spider, trailing a long, thin web, was moving swiftly around the feet of the chief watcher. Once, twice, and then it climbed up and around the black lizard's pillars. Tirith. It had to be her. Corvin glanced at the guards jabbing at the defenseless priests. The guards would no doubt swarm through the boot and up the tunnel to rescue their leader. He had to seal the door. Uncapping the last piece of his firestick, he jammed it into the latch. Molten rock flowed down, sealing it shut. As he turned back to the karst, a hand thrust out of the door's small window and flipped the hood off his head. Corvin jerked back as a smiling face appeared in the opening. It was Gavin. "Where's Madame Torrig?" The boy shrugged. "Where's the Grey Men?" The boy shook his head. Panic rose in Corvin's chest. "Where's the hammer?" Corvin stuck a hand through the window and held the hammer out in plain view, its blue light throbbing like a lighthouse beacon. Corvin quickly pushed it back inside. Power surged through him. He was sure that every eye was now focused on his back. He turned. Only one pair of eyes bore down on him, the eyes of the chief watcher. Corvin looked into those murderous dark orbs and his blood ran cold. "Gavin," he whispered hoarsely, "go up the tunnel. Find Tirith. Give her the hammer. Now, run!" He heard the boy leave. Time slowed as if Corvin were in a trance. The whirlpool churned one full revolution. The chief watcher rotated in counterpoint to command the leader of the Rakash. Then his arm swung back in measured beat like the second hand of a clock to point out Corvin. Just as his long claw clicked onto Corvin's position, the green rope bulged, its coils tightened, lashing the lizard firmly against the stone post as the whirlpool raced on around its track. "Treason!" shouted the lizard, its muscles twisting as it strained at the rope. "The priests are all guilty and have resorted to trickery!" The lizard pulled against his bonds and the water swirled even faster. All eyes were focused on the struggling reptile. "Listen to me! Listen to me!" shouted Lizard. "I speak the truth!" "Then you shall be judged by the truth," a woman called out. Tirith stepped through the black curtain, her white gown shimmering against its velvet blackness. "Another deception!" cried the lizard. "More lies!" Tirith strode toward him. "No one can lie when they are holding the truth." She lifted both hands over her head, the hammer clearly visible in her grasp. Blue light from the handle enveloped her as she towered over the chief watcher. Nothing but the water moved. "You say you have told us the truth, chief watcher. So now you shall be judged by the truth, and the truth will be revealed." She lowered the hammer toward the claw lashed to the top of the post. The lizard writhed and tried to pull away, but he was held fast. As the handle touched the top of the pillar, the lizard's claws clamped involuntarily around it. The sound of the whirlpool fell away as every eye fixed on the glowing hammer clutched in the black claw. The lizard dropped down between the posts, a grimace on its face. Its head fell forward onto its chest, releasing its breath in a long hiss. The Rakash leader took a step toward the hammer as a thin smile spread across the chief watcher's face. His thick tail whipped toward Tirith, ripping the control end of the crippin from her hand. The lizard drew up to his full height, the rope stretching as his claw raised the hammer off the pedestal.
"Old superstitions do not work in my world. The hammer will not harm me, for I am the chief watcher. I am the truth of the core."
A brilliant explosion of electricity wrapped itself around the creature, throwing Tirith to the ground. Sparks shot out from the base of the pillars as blue flames blazed through the loops of the crippin. Lightning arced about the thick black band on the lizard's neck as the chief watcher's head reared back in a silent scream. The light left his eyes, and he slumped forward within the blackened rope, leaving the hammer perfectly balanced on top of the pillar. The Rakash leader leapt past Jord, his hand reaching for the hammer. In its haste, it released the priest from the blue crippin, and in that instant the black blade was in Jord's hand, slicing through the air. The hand of the Rakash leader fell twitching to the floor, still holding the handle of the crippin rope. The Rakash leader lost his balance, slammed blindly into the pillar, knocking the hammer to the ground. The pale creature staggered off the balcony and vanished into the whirlpool. Jorah jumped forward to stand before Tirith, his blade extended toward the three remaining Rakash, who spread out across the front of the balcony, short yellow crippins in their hands. Each of the ropes ended in a sharp barb. The Rakash played the crippins like whips around Jorah's body, so it seemed there were a dozen barbed heads seeking to get past his blade. Jorah slashed at one and sliced it almost in half, but another sank its barb into its forearm. The priest yanked it out and pulled back, but his hand shook and the knife faltered. The three Rakash stepped back. Jord's hand slipped down to hang limply at his side. The knife clattered to the ground. The three fanned out wider, their whips closing in like venomous snakes. The yellow ropes slithered through the air toward Jord's body as their poisonous stingers hovered over his face. The three Rakash drew close in triumphant arrogance. "Tirith!" Corvin shouted. Her head spun to look at him. "The hammer!" He pointed to where it lay behind her. Tirith scooped it up and leapt in beside Jord, the black blade singing through the air and slashing the yellow ropes into pieces that fell twitching at Jord's feet. The Rakash now reached out for her, but she lifted the hammer toward them. A pulse of fierce blue light pushed them back toward the edge of the stage. But they were not defeated. They spread out along the front of the stage, pushing incrementally in through the light. Subtle movements at the side of the stage caught Corvin's eye. On either side of the platform, two of Madame Torrig's gray men were pushing a thin fire stick into the stone floor. Simultaneously, each of them gave his stick a sharp twist. A muted thump shot a narrow fracture clean across the balcony, separating the three Rakash from Jorid and Tirith. The huge slab tipped downward. The three gangly creatures stumbled backward to grab the lip of the stage as two more gray forms appeared, pulling Jorid and Tirith back to safety. With a crack, the two pillars snapped off the broken stage, plunging the body of the chief watcher into the water. The Rakash still clung to the front edge. For a moment, the slab hung by the sturdy metal rods that had connected the pillars to the control room. The whirlpool slowed and fell away. The Rakash were pulling themselves up when thick tentacles shot from the water and wrapped around the three white creatures, stretching their already long bodies to an impossible length. An eerie, terrifying sound filled the amphitheater as the Rakash cried out. With two loud pops, the control rods came apart. The stone shuddered, then fell into the pool with a colossal splash. A towering wave slammed the priests against the wall and dropped them back into the stone tiers. "Save those men!" Jorid cried out. The palace guard looked up in confusion. Some used their hooks to pull the priest to safety, while people from the stands behind them joined in to help. As the priests were being lifted over the wall, Corvin looked down into the karst. Through the ripples, he could make out the broken remains of the balcony lying on the bottom of the pool. The only sign of the Rakash was a severed hand trailing a long blue crippin that pointed down at the tangled body of the chief watcher. He looked again. The lizard's body was green. That was Sarek.